Welcome back to another episode of the Chainsaw Enema Show. I'm Johnny B. Ghoul.
And I'm Misfit Mike.
Tonight, Misfit Mike and I will be discussing House from 1986.
Yeah!
And this one's directed by Steve Miner, who's known for Halloween H2O.
Good movie.
Big Bully. You have to see that movie.
Yes.
Forever Young. It's a Mel Gibson movie.
It's a great movie.
He also did Friday the 13th Part 2 and 3. And this is written by, well, one of the writers, Fred Decker, who's known for The Monster Squad, Night of the Creeps, RoboCop 3, and just so many more.
Oh, yeah.
I looked up his IMDb, and I was like, wow.
Yeah.
He's a great writer.
Oh, yeah, he's fantastic.
He's really, really a great writer. He always seems depressed or something every time I see him in, like, interviews. You ever notice that?
Yeah,
he always seems like he's in a bad mood. Not a bad mood, but just kind of like a, you know, like he's just, like, sad or something.
If I did Friday the 13th Part 3, I'd be depressed. Sorry, JK.
And then the other writer is Ethan Wiley. He's another great writer. He hasn't done as much as the other guys, but it's really cool. Now, for the top cast of this movie, we have the great William Catt, who plays Roger Cobb. He was the character Tommy from the movie Carrie.
Yep, he also played the lead in The Greatest American Hero.
George Wendt as Harold Gorton in this, known mostly as Norm from Cheers.
Yep.
But he was also in the Mel Gibson movie Forever Young, and he was Fat Sam in the Chevy Chase movie Fletch. Remember that?
Yep. I love that movie. George Wendt is another actor I've really always admired.
He's just one of those guys that when you see him on screen, he just puts you in like a happy mood.
Yeah.
He's always that like goofy guy. Just so much comedy to him. That's probably why they got him for Cheers. He's just funny to watch and fun to watch. He's a great actor.
I always kind of put him in the same category as like John Candy. A guy who, it's like every time I see a movie with John Candy in it, it's, I guess it's kind of silly, but he always feels like that cool uncle, you know, that you always had. Who
Uncle Buck.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, I see what you're saying.
He's just, I love George Wendt's acting, and he's done, he did a lot of theater with William Catt as well.
Yeah, that's right, he did. So, a lot of people don't know that. Richard Mall as Big Ben. Now, he died October of last year.
Sadly, yeah.
And he, it's great, though. He played, I didn't know this until I recently looked it up, he played Dementor in Jingle All the Way.
He also played Bull.
I laughed at that one.
In Night Court. Mm-hmm. Which was a great, great show.
He's done a bunch of voice work, including Harvey Dent, Two-Face, and Batman the Animated Series.
Yes, which I did not know that until recently, and
it's fantastic.
Every freaking time I heard that voice, I was like, I know who that is. Who the hell is that? And it never dawned on me that it was him.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, he's another great actor. Very sad to hear when he passed away.
I also want to throw out Michael Ensign.
Uh-huh.
He plays Chet. He's like a kind of a small cameo in this movie, but he plays an important part. Really funny. He was the hotel manager in Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
I don't know how I didn't see it when I first watched this movie, but when I looked it up, I was like, holy shit, that is really funny.
Also, the person who produced this movie, I did not realize that it was Sean S. Cunningham.
You didn't know that?
No, I did not realize that until I watched this the other night, that Sean S. Cunningham had done this movie.
Uh-huh.
I kind of have a love-hate relationship with him.
That's understandable. But he's done a lot of great stuff, though, too.
He's got a great mind when it comes to stuff like this.
And him and Fred Decker, I think, worked on some stuff together, too. I didn't really get a chance to look up too much about the producers and directors. I did look up a little information on it.
I want to say that they worked on Last House together. The original Last House on the Left, which...
Okay. Yeah, I have seen that. That's the Wes Craven movie, right?
Yeah, that is.
That's a tough watch.
that's a rough movie.
The remake is a rough movie as well. Yeah, anything with a rape scene in it is really, extremely hard for me to watch because it just angers me so much.
I
know
here.
It's all pretend and it's just the movie, but just the idea and thinking about it, because this stuff really happens today. And it always has. It's just super upsetting.
But I'll tell you what happens to those people?
Oh, they get what's coming to them. Yeah, they get what they deserve. Yeah. Okay, so I want to start things off here. Mike, you said this movie is a yearly watch for you. And I know you grew up watching this and you're always saying how much you love it.
Yep.
But we never actually really have dug deep into talking about this movie. So it's kind of a treat for me. And it's probably going to be maybe a treat for you to hear what I have to say. maybe it might be a little surprising because I've never seen this movie.
Right.
This was my first time watching it, believe it or not. But growing up, as you know, with these movies, I was always drawn to the second house, which they don't follow the story. I mean, no. The only thing they really follow is the haunted house part. I always loved the second house. I grew up watching it. My dad loved it. And it's hokey as shit.
But the characters
in it and everything. But yeah, I love the movie. But anytime the first house was on TV or something and I'd see it, for some odd reason, the second house would always follow. You know, if you looked at the channel that showed you what was on TV,
yeah.
I would always see House Part 2 and I would be like, okay, well, I guess I could watch the first one. And I'd start watching it, and then I'd get bored, and I'd flip the channel for some reason. I don't know why. I just never really was intrigued by this movie. It just has a little bit of a different feel than the second one does, which is weird because it's the same guys who did Fred Decker and Steve Miner. Was it Steve Miner who did that too? But yeah, I just was never drawn to it. So anyway, I want to ask you, what is it about this movie that you love so much besides the nostalgic factor?
Well,
because you always say, I love that movie.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's all I ever know. So I'm excited to hear your input on this movie and your thoughts and views and stuff like that. And I think the listeners will be intrigued as well.
So this, and you're gonna actually laugh at this one, I think.
Should I order a pizza?
This one was the first horror comedy I ever saw. The very first.
How do you remember this shit?
We've talked about this before. I can remember shit that happened like 40 years ago, but I can't remember what happened 4 minutes ago. Anyways.
I can't either.
But yeah, my mom is actually the one who introduced me to this movie.
My dad introduced me to the second movie.
So, because I watched this one, the second one already came out before I watched this one, but I ended up watching this one first.
And your mom likes these movies.
Oh yeah,
right?
She loves them. She not so much the third and fourth one.
Understandable.
they're fun, but they're not near as good as the first two. I've always loved the atmosphere of this movie. The score is amazing.
The score fit perfectly.
Oh, yeah.
For like a haunted house.
Well, it was
type of movie.
You know, it was Mancini who did the score for this. The same guy who did the music for Friday the 13th.
Yeah, yeah. So, he did a great job for this.
He does amazing work.
That really stood out to me right on the main screen.
Yeah.
Right before you click play, because we have the Arrow editions, both me and you. And at the main screen, just that music that started playing, it caught me. It just grabbed me. I was like, this is great. This is just a perfect atmosphere for a movie like this. Anyway, continue.
It's so fantastic. I love the practical effects. I love the acting. The suspenseful parts are fantastic. The comedy is just so great.
Over the top.
The banter between William and George is absolutely amazing.
Yeah, they worked really well off of each other. It was very natural.
Yeah, well, again, they did a lot of theater together, so they had that, you know, the ability to do that.
Yeah.
But the story was great. It's just everything about this movie just really sucked me in. I love the way that Big Ben looked. I love the way the War Demon looked.
Yeah, War Demon was... when that first thing popped out of that closet, I was like, what the fuck is that thing?
A giant raccoon.
That was great. I love the way they made the War Demon look. And Big Ben was probably my favorite, I think.
And the witch...
Oh, God. Okay. Yeah. Well, we're going to...
Oh, my God.
I'll get into that.
Yeah. So, I everything about this was fantastic. And the fact that this was Kane Hodder's first job.
Yeah, he was the stunt coordinator. Yeah.
And the part there where William's beating the crap out of the bag with the witch in it. Kane was in the bag getting the crap beat out of him with a shovel.
Well, I think he was, because he's the, like you said, the stunt coordinator. Yeah. He was also the one to control the hand.
Yeah.
When he's talking to the hot chick next door and the hand's moving. That's also Kane Hodder. Hand.
Yeah.
It's just hilarious.
Kane was telling him, you know,
poor guy.
hit me with the point, not hit me with the flat, you know, part of the shovel. And, you know, Will, he got, you know, a little confused. He was beating the crap out of him with the flat part of the shovel. and Kane was like, it hurt like hell, but it looked great.
You got to give the stunt guys so much credit.
Oh, God, yeah.
They don't get a lot of recognition with a lot of the stuff they do because you never see their face.
No, but, and I have a mass amount of respect for them. Just, I mean, they put their life on the line every damn time they go out on set.
Now, did you see this movie before you saw House Part 2?
Yes. Like I said, House Part 2 had already came out. before I watched this movie.
One. Yeah, but you but saw I the ended first up
watching
one.
The first one.
Okay, yeah. See, I saw the second one first, so maybe that's why I like the second one more.
That could be.
I remember going to the local video store and even Blockbuster sometimes,
yeah,
and seeing the cover art of the hand pressing the doorbell.
And
I got so excited every time. Well, the second one. Mm-hmm. I always got really excited when they'd have it in, and I'd always beg my dad.
Yeah.
Can we get this? Can we get this? Yes, we can get it. It's a good movie, I guess. For the 50th time.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually kind of brag on my collection a little bit. I have a statue of the hand
with
the doorbell that I keep next to my box set. But yeah, I mean, this movie is just... It's so great.
So would you say that the first one is still your favorite out of the trilogy?
I'd say that it's probably tied with the second one.
With the second one?
Yeah.
That's really surprising because they're two very different... I mean, different actors. The story is pretty much the same. I mean, it's just it's a haunted house and shit happens. Right. That's it. And it's unexplained, which I love. The second one... I mean, the characters in this first one are, they're pretty hokey, especially the chick that, what was it, the Sandy Witch there. kind of reminded me of a big fucking Cabbage Patch doll.
Oh, God, that voice.
It was very unnerving for me to watch. But yeah, the second one had characters that were hokey as hell too, but they were...
The gunslinger there, the Graham Slurs.
Yeah. And the Capitiller thing, the cute little Capitiller.
Capitiller?
I say Capitiller. I have kids, so...
Capitiller, that's adorable.
But yeah, okay. it's that thing was really cute and adorable. But for a character in a movie like House, it's like, what the hell? What did they do here? And then Gramps is hilarious, and you got all these other great characters. I feel like House is more for adults, if that makes sense. And the second one, I think, appeals more to younger kids. I said, when I was 8-9 years old, I loved the second House, and maybe that's why I didn't care for the first one every time it was on.
Well, they both had that comedic edge to them.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of feel like the second one was more comedy and adventure and less horror, where this one was more comedy and horror.
I think there's more comedy than horror in the first one. I mean, that's just my opinion. I saw this with fresh eyes again. I think if I grew up watching this movie, I'd have a different opinion of it.
Well, I mean, there's parts in this movie that, again, still kind of creep me out. The witch character just... Bleh.
What about that stop motion bat at the end there?
I love that thing.
I laughed so hard when
especially
I saw
that. Especially when he freaking flips the shotgun around.
Oh, God, it was so funny.
It was so bad, but so beautiful.
I do have to say, though, it was filmed really well.
Oh, yeah. The
for this time.
The cinematography in this was absolutely amazing.
Outstanding.
And the atmosphere, the paintings that Anne Elizabeth did were just so surreal and... just the way that the grandfather clock and the way that the house looked.
And it doesn't look like your average creepy house. It looks like a regular Victorian type of house that, someone would live in, like an old, grandmother or aunt. It was the guy's aunt that's in this, right?
Richard
Cobb. Who ends up hanging herself and everything. Spoiler alert, by the way, but if you haven't seen this by now, go see it.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like a normal house with really bad wallpaper.
So. Yeah, well, it was the 80s, so it wasn't the greatest of wallpapers.
But yeah, I could go on about this movie for ages. I just love it so much.
Did you notice the for sale sign at the beginning of the movie had the name Craven Realty on it?
That
was first thing I pointed out. Obviously, it's got to be a nod to Wes Craven.
Oh, sure.
I assumed that when watching, and I pointed it out, and I'm like, does that say Craven Realty? That's fucking awesome. The original screenplay that was by Fred Decker was actually supposed to be just a traditional horror movie with no humor. The comedy was added by Ethan Wiley when he rewrote the script. If you watch the special features, I know you did.
Yep.
Fred Decker actually says that if he went with his direction, it probably wouldn't have been as good. It worked better with the comedy. And I totally agree. If they didn't have these comedy parts in here, this movie would have sucked balls.
It would have been really, really, really dark.
It would have been so bad.
It would have been a really dark, very depressing type of movie. Because essentially, this is about a guy, who went to Vietnam. His close friend ends up getting viciously taken out.
Mm-hmm.
and he's suffering from severe PTSD.
And you know, while I was watching this movie, through most of the movie, I thought that all of this shit was happening in his head.
Yeah.
Because like, he'll go to the medicine cabinet to take like his Valium or something else, and every time he's about to take his pill, he hears a noise or something. Yep. He turns around. He never takes his pill. He's never getting sleep.
Yep.
He's having these flashbacks of like the war and everything. And the whole entire time I'm thinking, this has got to be in his head.
And that's exactly what they wanted you to think.
Yeah, yeah. And it worked until George Wendt's character saw it. Then I was like, okay, that was a nice twist. Which, by the way, is my favorite fucking part of the movie.
Again, big raccoon.
Oh, my God. If you don't shoot him, he's going to get away. You've got to get him.
Oh. Yep, yep. We'll see him every day.
Now, this probably wasn't intentional, but you know, when Big Ben is like his skeleton zombie mm-hmm. look at the end, it resembles the Iron Maiden Eddie mascot.
Yes.
I don't think it was intentional, it really freaking does. I forget, is it the Trooper?
Yeah.
It's one of the albums. It looks very, very much like Eddie.
I think it's... I think the Trooper,
he's wearing like his British war gear and stuff. Yeah. He's not wearing like... And he's carrying a flag and stuff. Mm. Anyway, one of those Eddie mascots. Yeah. He looks very, very much like...
Well, there's only like 940 of them, so...
There's a few of them, yeah. I didn't know this. I thought this was interesting, and I can understand why, but Richard Mall didn't... He wasn't inside the mask and costume of the Big Ben zombie during the finale. The role was actually played by a guy named Kurt Wilmot.
Mm-hmm.
He was this really tall tennis pro who was a friend of the filmmakers, and I guess he had a horrible time in this role since... I mean, they said he had zero body fat.
Yeah.
His bones would slam against that hard shell of the costume, which you could imagine would be pretty excruciating. Oh, yeah. So he clearly didn't have a fun time with this. So again, with these like stunt coordinators and stunt guys,
yep.
and this guy, which was a friend of the film, I mean, man, you got to give these guys credit for going through hell just to make a silly movie like this.
Oh, yeah. And I guess from what I understand, the worst part for him was having the mask on, because the way that the mask was created, it like was really
smushed
down
on his nose,
the bridge of his nose.
Yeah. Oh,
so
God.
And you know, he's in there for, you know,
a while.
Hours at a time.
Yep. A while.
So it had to have sucked. And I mean, Big Ben really wasn't on screen all that much.
No, it was mostly just toward the end. Yeah. I was waiting for him. But when he was on screen,
it looked great.
It looked fantastic. The practical effects in this, they were done really well. Like, yeah, some of them were hokey, like the war demon. But it worked, because when I saw that thing come out, like I said, I was like, what the fuck is that thing? It was great. But yeah, Big Ben, I think, was my favorite. It was done so well.
And considering the fact that most of the special effects for this movie, the practical effects, mm-hmm. were done in the backyard of the freaking director's house.
Yeah.
You know, that's pretty damn impressive.
Now, a lot of this stuff you'll find on the special features of the Arrow edition.
Yes.
It has a lot of stuff. It's got the vintage making of the film, and it's got
which
all
is
new
awesome.
Upgraded version of the making, which came out, I
2015.
I wanted to say 15, yeah. somewhere around 2015. So it's quite new. I mean, and there's interviews with George Wendt on here.
Mm-hmm.
William
Katz on there.
Yep, he's on there. The Fred Decker, everyone is
Sean,
on. Even Sean Cunningham. Yeah, he's on there.
Cunningham was on there.
The woman who played Sandy.
Yeah, whose name I can never remember.
I can't either, but my God, does she look...
No, she got old.
Well, it looked like she might have had some work done.
That too.
And it didn't come out the greatest.
No.
But no, seriously.
Not to be mean.
Very friendly lady. She did a fantastic job in this movie.
Yeah, loved her to pieces, but I mean, she kind of looked like melted plastic.
A little bit.
Not to be mean.
That is mean.
I know.
Now, I got to mention this one last thing before we get into the movie plot, which I know you're excited about, and I'm excited about talking about, too. The War Demon. It was an elaborate puppet measuring 18 feet, and it shows.
Oh, yeah.
It was operated by 15 fucking people.
Yep.
So back in, like, the closet, you had 15 fucking people, like, with strings and all this other stuff operating it and with controls. I mean, holy shit.
And they were really afraid because of the type of material that they used for the arms on it. There was a tendency that it might explode and throw shrapnel everywhere.
That would have been awesome.
Not for the people involved, but
kind
of.
For us fans watching it, that would have been a scene.
But it was really funny. I've seen this movie a million times, and I did not realize the detail in it until I watched the documentary last night.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize the machine gun for the elbow and the bullet frickin' fingers and all that crazy shit.
I didn't notice that either, because that they were trying to make it like his Vietnam, like,
yeah.
Like something from Vietnam that was...
Like the faces of people, yeah. Like... The faces from, like, some of the actors from the scenes in Vietnam, they molded into the war demon.
That's the word I was looking for. They molded it together. And, yeah, the bullets for the fingers. I didn't notice that at all until after I looked up some of the information.
Yeah, that was fucking crazy, man.
It's very cool. Very cool. Because you don't really get a good look of it, because so much is happening on the screen when that thing comes out and tries to attack a few times.
Well, it happens
twice.
Fast.
It does, yeah.
You know, so.
And it comes right at you. It's like it's like POV shot,
yeah,
and it's coming right at you, and it's terrifying. I love the way they made it look, though.
It's gnarly, and the thing was so damn heavy they couldn't even break the mold on it until after they got, you know, usually when they do a mold they'll put the stuff in the mold,
yep,
and then just take the mold off. They had to actually disassemble the entire mold because the thing was just too big to be able to just take the whole mold off by itself.
That makes sense. I mean, if you see this thing on the screen, like, it's something else, man. It's huge. I mean, 18 feet.
Yeah.
That's quite large.
I'll tell you what, man. If I, for the longest time after I saw this movie for the first time, I was real cautious about opening a damn closet door because that just freaked me the hell out.
So it's really a pretty interesting story. I mean, there's not much of a story. Well, more of a story than the other movies, I think.
Yeah.
It's one of the best ones out of all of them, but...
Oh, yeah.
It's really cool. So you got this guy, Roger Cobb, and he's played by William Catt. And he's an author of horror novels, and he's a pretty troubled guy for reasons. He's recently separated from his wife, Sandy. Kay Lenz is her name.
Thank you.
And their only son has disappeared without a trace, and you don't really know much information about it. You get little snippets here and there as the movie goes. And it can get a little confusing at times. I was a little confused with their son missing. I didn't really know that the movie was going to go where it went, and that is like him looking for his son.
Right.
Because when the movie starts out, no one's really looking. I mean, it's just seems like this guy's a troubled guy and he's just trying to move on with his life. So that was one thing that confused me a little bit. The third act felt very different than the rest of the movie to me, but we'll get into that after. That's just me. So his son's disappeared, and his favorite Aunt Elizabeth, who's played by the great Susan French, she just died, and it was an apparent suicide by hanging. And the beginning of the movie is very cool how it starts out. It's this delivery guy. This was like early Instacart, Brittany was saying. And I was like, yeah, that's right. They had Instacart back then, only you had to call on the phone.
Back then it was just called grocery delivery service.
There you go. So there's this kid that delivers the Aunt Elizabeth's groceries, and he goes and knocks on the door. The door opens. She's not answering, so he goes inside, and he's looking around.
Gets scarred for life.
He puts the groceries on the table, and he's yelling out, you know, got your groceries, blah, blah, blah. Okay, he turns around. He's about to leave. He hears a sound upstairs. So, you know, like anyone would do, he just walks through the house, casually walking upstairs. I mean, it's an older lady. I mean, I think I would do the same thing to make sure that she's okay, because she's the only one living there alone. So he's walking up the stairs. He sees a really morbid painting on the wall. I guess she was a painter.
Yeah, she was an artist. He says, sick.
And he's walking up the stairs, and he hears another noise. He goes into this room, and he sees her hanging.
Aunt Elizabeth hanging around.
Yep, hanging around by a noose. And I don't know. I always thought this part was kind of weird. He screams like a little girl, and he runs out of the house, gets on his bike, and he leaves.
I would, too.
I would have called 911 from the phone
or
something. It would have scared the hell out of me, but I would have been more...
It wasn't a bike. It was a scooter.
It was a little concerning. God damn it, Mike! Fuck! Well, on top of everything else, it's been more than a year since the release of Roger's latest book, and he's being pressured by his publisher to write another. And it's funny because you first meet Roger at this autograph signing in this bookstore, and it's hilarious because this is not realistic at all. Fans do not act this way, at least not every single one of them, for a fucking book signing. It's, I mean, maybe for Stephen King, but even then, it's just these characters, man, they just go nuts. It's like they're meeting Elvis for the first time or something.
I thought for a second Andy Wilkes was going to pop up in there somewhere.
Exactly, yeah. It was great.
That scene, a great just scene, cracks me up every time I see it. Hey, you got every 80s stereotype standing there in a single line.
You got this one guy who
looks like David from The Lost Boys.
He's really excited and says, you know, what's the next book going to be? And Roger plans a novel based on his experiences in Vietnam instead of one of his usual horror books.
Yeah.
And the guy's just kind of like, oh, okay. He doesn't seem interested at all. I mean, clearly they probably wouldn't be. I mean, they're horror fans.
Every kind of like Stephen King, you know, going and writing one of those romance novels.
Core, yeah. Softcore romance.
It would probably sell like freaking hotcakes, but it would just be...
It would be Stephen King writing Misery.
You know what would be one of those books. If he wrote a romance novel, but wrote it in the way he usually writes his horror stories?
I'd read it.
I'd read the shit out of that.
So Roger plans to write a new novel based on his experiences in Vietnam. And it's not much that he is interested in the subject. It's more of the way of purging himself of the horrors and stuff he experienced while he was there.
Yeah, well, it's kind of like therapy. You know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I guess it helped. I don't know. That's not the whole point of the story.
No. I think it's the whole part of the story when you first get into it, but then it gets a lot broader of a situation.
So he goes to his aunt's funeral and he's there and
him and like two other people and that's it. I thought that was kind of sad, and the preacher, of course.
Yeah, there's not really many people there. So after his aunt's funeral, instead of selling her house, which I think they were going to do, but then he decides to stay there.
Yeah.
The state attorney wanted to sell the house, but Roger decides to live there for a while and he's going to write his book there. Having spent a great deal of time there when he was, you know, younger as a kid and everything,
right.
There's a lot of memories there for him. So he thought it would be a good idea, which I could understand. It's pretty good.
Yeah, it's a beautiful house.
So. It really is. I mean, it needs a little bit of... It needs some touching up here and there, but it's a nice looking house. It's livable.
Bad wallpaper.
So after moving in, Roger begins to have these really powerful graphic nightmares. Thoughts about his army buddy Big Ben, who's played by Richard Mall. And I thought he was a riot in this, especially when he goes on that shooting spree and he's like laughing his ass off like a crazy person and shooting.
Yoo-hoo, Charlie!
And he ended up dying in Vietnam.
Yeah, but he did.
He has thoughts about him, and they come spilling out. In addition, strange phenomena spring forth from the house. All kinds of shit starts happening.
Oh, that fucking sturgeon.
And it haunts him in the waking hours as well. One thing really quick that I don't have in my notes. When the real estate attorney guy is showing him around...
Mm-hmm.
And they go in the garage and they're talking about, oh, you could put a spa in here, you can do this, you can do that. Roger starts to talk. For some odd reason, the real estate agent is holding one of those fucking...
Frog giggers?
Spear guns.
Yeah, they're frog giggers.
and it goes off. I don't know if he meant to do it on purpose.
He was so fucking nonchalant about the whole thing.
It was hilarious. He was like, oops, sorry about that. Like, it almost takes Roger's head, like, it almost shoots him in the... When I first saw that, I was like, what the fuck? It threw me off because everything was quite serious up until this one moment.
Yeah.
The guy's just like, oh, sorry about that. And then he just continues talking and like he just goes on like nothing happened. But that's the way that they actually planned to do it. They wanted that part in there. And I thought that was really weird.
It definitely is a very abrupt change in pace. And it really throws you off.
Yeah,
First time I saw it, I remember being like, wait. What the hell?
Yeah, it threw me off. It really threw me off. So anyway, Roger tries communicating his fears to his nosy next-door neighbor, Harold, this is George Wendt. Harold thinks that he's crazy. He doesn't say it, and he doesn't really show it much. he shows concern at one point.
He really loved Roger's aunt there.
He makes a comment or something.
That's my aunt. Heart of gold, though. Beautiful lady, especially for her age.
So one night while investigating a noise coming from his late aunt's bedroom, Roger goes up there and he's attacked by something in the shape of a horrible fucking beast. Mm-hmm. More strange things happen. These garden tools, I was laughing so hard at this. These garden tools embedded themselves into the door near his head. They start like chasing him in like midair. They're just like floating around and like chasing him.
It was amazing how they did that part.
It, you know, for 1985, 86, like, yeah, how did they do it? It was done so well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because back in the old days, they'd use, like, fishing string.
Yeah.
If they did it with that, you can't even tell.
Well, what they did was they took a wire and then they sprayed it with this clear coat stuff so it wouldn't show up on the camera. And then they almost did, like, a setting like you would a marionette. And so if you watch the making of it, you see them, like, controlling. You had, like, two guys up here controlling it, and then you had a guy at the bottom who swung the shovel.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, the way they did it, it looked absolutely fantastic.
It really looked good.
And that's, again, you know, I know I harp on it, but just the work that goes into these practical effects absolutely astounds me.
Yeah.
And it's like they said on the documentary last night, nowadays it would all have been done with CGI. I'm sure it would have looked fine.
I can see them remaking this movie soon.
They've talked about it for a while.
Wouldn't surprise me.
I kind of hope they don't.
I don't know. I think they could pull it off if they had the right people to work on the film.
If they had the right people and they kept the soul of the original movie,
yeah,
I would be okay with it.
His wife then turns up on the doorstep. As he's saying hello, he turns around, he turns back, and she transforms into this hideous fucking hag. They call her Sandy Witch. And this threw me off a little bit because, I mean, seriously, this looked like a fucking, like, garbage pail kid.
It looked like a fucking demon. Elephant demon from hell.
The teeth on this thing was just beautiful.
And I actually got in trouble the first time I saw this movie.
Oh, no.
Okay,
what'd
so...
what you do?
What happens was the shotgun shells that he was holding roll off the table. She bends down to pick them up, pops back up, looking like a trash bag from hell.
Yeah.
I'm like 7, 8 years old. Scared the living crap out of me. I screamed, Jesus Christ.
So you...
I got my mouth washed.
I was going to say, yeah. So, yeah, so he shoots Sandy Witch.
I would too.
Freaked out, you know. And then Cobb battles gremlin creatures, these like little critters. they're attempting to kidnap a neighbor's child.
Yeah.
Roger's reluctantly babysitting. This comes a little bit after, though. But what I want to point out first is when he shoots Sandy Witch, he goes out on the porch after that and realizes that it's his wife.
Mm-hmm.
And
or he thinks it's his wife.
Yeah, but to us seeing it, it's his wife.
Right.
So the whole time I'm thinking, all right, yeah, this guy's got some serious PTSD issues and he's struggling with this shit. Maybe it wasn't a good idea that he should have been writing the book in this house. I mean, with everything that the guy's going through, this is just a really bad idea. And then you got poor George Went next door looking out the window. He doesn't see anything on the ground because I think there's bushes there, so you can't see. All you see is Roger standing out there holding a shotgun, looking yep. crazy, and shooting. I guess he heard the gunshot. He didn't see him shooting, but he ended up calling the police and reporting it.
Mm-hmm.
So the police show up.
Yeah, like 40 of them.
There's a few of them.
And they got there fast.
What does he do? Well, he discovers that the mysterious creature in the bedroom closet appears at the stroke of midnight. Initially, he attempts to capture video evidence of this creature in the closet and explaining the creature as a large raccoon
when George so to not comes scare him away. Scares the shit out of
right,
him.
But I mean, when because he's like doing a test run.
Yeah.
At first, before George comes over or whatever. And, you know, he's got his army, like, slacks on or whatever, or his army uniform.
His army fatigues.
He's got a helmet on. He's got fucking goggles on. And he's just kind of practicing. And he pulls the door open and he runs down the stairs. He's doing somersaults. He's running up the walls. And he goes outside and he, like, does, like, one of those guitar slides on his knees with his hands up in the air. And George Wendt's character goes,
hey,
buddy.
Roger, how you doing?
Hey, buddy, what are you doing? And I died laughing, and it's funny because, like, George Wendt's character is just kind of like, hey, how's it going? Like, nothing happened.
My all-time favorite part, though, was when he's upstairs, he's got all the camera stuff set up.
Yeah.
And he's about to open the closet with the rope, and George comes in, and he's like, hey, Roger! And I'm just like, ah! scared the shit out of me.
He screams, yeah. Oh, I died laughing. There's some like amazing. There's some like funny jump moments in this movie. So Roger later recruits Harold to assist him and arms with a harpoon gun.
Frog gigger.
Well, whatever. Attached to a wire. So that way when they open the door at midnight, you know, the he'll get to see it. So this whole time that this is happening, I'm thinking, okay, he's not even going to show up. Watch. It's going to be like a... He's going to just think he's crazy at this point. No. Yeah. He opens up that door.
And here comes the war demon.
The creature comes out clawing and growling and...
And George doesn't do shit.
No, Harold, yeah, he doesn't do anything. He just screams and he's shaking in terror. And Roger's like beating the shit out of it with a baseball bat or a crowbar or something.
A fire poker.
Right. He's just smacking the shit out of it. And he keeps on telling him, shoot it! Shoot it! All this stuff is happening. It's great. And he finally shoots him. Yeah, he shoots the creature with the harpoon gun and it retreats back into the closet. By the way, I have to say the way that that part is filmed every time with the just complete darkness behind him.
Yeah.
I love that. Yeah, I love how you can't see anything and there's just black darkness and then you see this creature.
You know, the rope gets wrapped around Roger's ankle.
Uh-huh.
And Harold,
and it drags him in.
I'm going to hold on. I'm never going to let go. Hey, let's go.
Well, after getting loose from the wire, he discovers that he's back in Vietnam.
Yeah.
Close to a critically wounded Big Ben. Parliament. In pain, Ben begs Roger to finish him off, and Roger can't. He's unable to do it. He wants to go get help, so he explains to him that he's going to go get help. Unfortunately,
the Viet Cong
approach, and Roger runs back to the portal, and as he is being dragged away by Viet Cong, Ben swears revenge against Roger, which is scary.
Sucks.
So you know something's going to happen. You know he's coming back.
Yeah.
And it was a rough moment because I don't think Roger meant to do it. To his friend, it didn't look that way. After he returns to the bedroom closet, Roger removes a cloth covering a painting his aunt was working on before she died. And behind the cloth reveals an image of his son, Jimmy, trapped in the bathroom mirror. Now, the son in this movie, like his son, is actually the son of, is it Steve Miner?
Yeah. If you're being as young as he is in a little bit that he was in the movie, he did really
good. He did a good job. William Catt. His son showed up on the set, and there's one scene that he was watching his dad do, and it's when he gets pulled into the closet by that creature. And I guess it made his son like really cry because he thought his dad was really in danger.
Right.
Poor kid.
I will say that little homie had one hell of a freaking 80s mullet going on with the spiky hair on top and whatever. Little dude was freaking rocking that shit.
So behind the cloth reveals an image of his son, Jimmy, and it's trapped in the bathroom mirror. Eventually, Roger finds that what appears to be an entity into a sinister other world through the bathroom medicine cabinet. I thought this was kind of an interesting take. I mean, just it kind of reminded me of like when I watched the second one. You have this room and all of a sudden it's prehistoric time jungle caveman.
Yeah.
It has all sorts of like different like it's almost like portals to like different like worlds or different.
So,
it's cool. So looking into the void, he's pulled into the darkness by an unseen creature.
The bat demon.
In the darkness, however, he locates his lost son. Cobb manages to escape with Jimmy, but as they're leaving the house, they're confronted by the living, partially decomposed corpse of Big Ben. I was doing the quotes there when I said living.
And he is awesome.
Oh, he's just fantastic looking. As soon as I saw this guy on the screen, I got really excited.
And the voice.
Oh, the voice is great.
Amazing.
The way they did that was awesome.
Yeah, the voices for all the creatures in this were so freaking good.
Yeah. Because Rogers, you know, failed to kill him when he was wounded in Nam, and instead allowed him to be taken prisoner and blah, blah, blah. And
yeah,
tortured and everything. Ben reveals
him for weeks and all that other stuff.
Well, Ben calls him out and, you know, he's out to destroy him at this point, and that's why he's there.
Mm-hmm.
Roger confronts Ben, aware that his anger over the kidnapping of his son has overwhelmed his fears. And I gotta say that it was really unexpected, that part. I was kind of like, what the hell just changed? within like a split second.
Yeah.
You know, it was almost as if they like rushed this scene. What I felt.
It was a bit abrupt. And it going back a little bit to the time when he rescues Jimmy from the cage there, and you see the shadow of... you don't know it's Big Ben.
Yeah, but you see that shadow. Time,
but you see the shadow on him, you know, shooting the machine gun.
Yeah.
I was, the first time I saw that, I was like, what the hell is going on with that? Because it didn't connect in my head, you know, that, especially as young as I was, that it was the ghost of Big Ben coming back to take revenge. So when I finally saw that it was Big Ben, I was like, holy crap, that's messed up.
So unable to instill fear in Roger any longer, Ben is defeated.
Yeah, with a grenade.
I think so. Yeah, well, the first time, because you think he's defeated the first time when he pushes, because he opens up, Roger opens up this door, right? And it's like, and they're like really high up or something, or is it a waterfall?
Well,
or,
what it is it's like a cliff with the ocean underneath and a rocky beach. Yeah, that was actually some of the earlier usage of green screen when they did that.
I thought it looked pretty decent.
For what it was, I really think they did a great job. I think Kane did a good job with how they did the safety harness. Mm-hmm. It actually went up through his shirt, and there was a piece that was actually stuck out under the linoleum that came out of his sleeve.
Oh, wow.
So he was super safe while he was up there, but it was like 20 feet up off the set.
It was still a dangerous stunt to be doing. Yeah. So,
but it looked really good.
It did look good. But he ends up taking him out, and he ends up falling. So you think that he's gone, but he's not.
Nope.
He comes back, and it's scary as shit when he does. It kind of startled me. It was a little bit of a jumper. And there's not many jump. Well, there's a few jumpers in this movie. The War Demon, definitely.
First time you saw that, that'll make you crap yourself.
Yeah, it was fun to watch that.
Yeah.
So Roger destroys him, finally.
Boom.
With the grenade and escapes with his... And it's funny because he's trying to get the grenade off or whatever, trying to figure it out. Yeah. It didn't work. And yeah, so he escapes with his son. He glances back at the house triumphantly, and he's beaten it and regained control of his life. And the mom shows up, and the son runs out, gives the mom a hug, and then it shows a close-up of Roger with a big smile on his face, and that's it.
Another abrupt ending.
Well, not even just that. A happy ending. Like, what the fuck was that? I was really surprised at that, and I have to be honest, I didn't like that they ended it like that.
You want me to be honest, perfectly honest with you?
No, I want you to fucking lie to me and all the listeners.
Bite me. No, I didn't care for it either.
Really?
Honestly.
Huh.
I thought the ending of the second one was much better.
We got to go back, and we're going to have to do that one eventually.
Yeah.
It's a great movie. I thought it was much better. I mean, this one was good, but I don't know. I got some things to say in my final rating, but that's the end of the movie. It ends very abrupt.
Yep.
I mean, there were some great things about it. Don't get me wrong. I loved Big Ben. I thought the cinematography was really done well.
Mm-hmm.
The lighting was great. The atmosphere worked. You know, the music, the score worked for this movie.
Most definitely.
If anything, go watch it. And even if you just have it playing in the background, the music and the score it really does have a very eerie vibe to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's haunting, and it works for this movie.
The general flow of the score is good enough, but when it gets to the parts that are really suspenseful...
Yeah, oh, it picks up.
Yeah, it picks up so well, and it has some of the weirdest music choices in it. You know, it's got You're No Good by Linda Ronstadt.
Yeah.
And then it's got This Is Dedicated to the One I Love.
There was one song in here where me and Brittany looked at each other like, what the fuck? This just changed completely. But it's 80s. It's totally
80s. It was just
80s.
So fucking random. And it cracked me up.
It had that little montage scene in it.
Yeah.
With that one song. it was great. But it's the 80s.
Like the now that I'm older and I can actually appreciate more of the stuff in this movie.
Yeah,
I love it even more than when I was a kid. Okay, so your rating.
You want my rating?
Yes, I've been waiting all freaking week because you haven't said a damn thing.
I haven't. Before saying anything, like I said in the beginning of the episode, I have not seen this movie to its entirety. Finally, sat down the other night. No, actually, it was a few nights ago. So I was really excited to watch it. I really was looking forward to it because I have the Arrow edition for for some time, mm-hmm. and I was just waiting for the perfect time to watch it, and this was the perfect time. So I watched this with fresh eyes, and with the rating that I'm going to give, I kept an open mind while watching this, but I also remembered, okay, this is from the 80s. Mm-hmm. I pretty much know what to expect, that it's going to be good practical effects, which it is. I somehow knew that the music was going to be great. Probably because I knew that the second house, was really great too. And it sort of has that same sort of atmosphere as far as like with the music.
I think he did the music. Mancini did the music for the second one as well. I'm almost positive.
But yeah, like I said, I watched this with fresh eyes, and here's my rating. So William Catt he's not a particularly accomplished actor. But he is nonetheless likable and generates a great deal of sympathy. God damn it. Sympathy. I can't talk. A great deal of sympathy for his character in this movie. I think he realizes that the key to making a good comedy is to pretend that the material is serious, making everything seem more real. And George Wendt, outstanding. He gives a great supporting performance as the nosy next door neighbor. Mm-hmm. He really does. He's great. He's funny. I think he's a terrific actor. Actually, I found out because there was a certain type of dialogue, especially at the one part where they're eating Chinese at the kitchen table. I didn't put this in my notes, but there's this one scene where Roger asks Harold if he thinks he's crazy. Harold just kind of, he mentions you're getting separated. You lost your son. You had a bad experience in war.
A few marbles rolling around.
Yeah, you got a few marbles rolling around, but and no, the look. You're not crazy, not now. I don't see it. Yeah, he says it like it's just so, like you said, nonchalant.
Yeah, and that's George Wendt's type of comedy.
I guess that whole part wasn't even the dialogue to the movie, but they went with it because William and George worked so well off of each other that it just seemed more natural, and it also made Harold's character appear a little bit more funnier and like a little bit more comedic, which it did, because as I was watching this, I thought, it's a little awkward.
But it's supposed to be.
But it is funny. So I have to say, while this movie entertains, it still ends up far behind when compared to movies like Evil Dead 2. House is like a less outrageous version of that. I couldn't help but think of Evil Dead. Several things that Sam Raimi would utilize a year later are present in this film, from the severed hand with a mind of its own to a moving wall ornament. We didn't even mention that in the
fucking sturgeon.
Oh, that was so great. The sturgeon just comes to life and it just starts like flapping. It's like back flipper and just and Roger
making that damn squealing noise.
Roger just shoots the hell out of it. I mean, he's freaking out.
Then puts a freaking sheet over it.
I thought it was really funny though, because the whole time I'm saying to Brittany, I'm like, why is he getting so bent out of shape? It can't go anywhere. It's stuck to the wall. He's acting like he's getting chased by it though. But that's what's so funny about it too. And that's what I loved about that scene. So I couldn't help think of the deer from Evil Dead 2 though. So it's a little bit more of a less outrageous version of that. Now, the final part of the movie is kind of what I had the most problem with. It didn't possess the same dynamic of what was being seen so far. And the happy ending felt contrived. I don't know why they put it there. I really had an issue with that. I did, however, like the fact that they didn't come up with some boring explanation as to why the house was haunted. I thought that was a great idea. It's just left up to your imagination. It's just mysterious. It's just a haunted house. Why? Who the fuck knows?
Right.
I thought that was great. Strange things just happened, and that's it. And then to close, I think House is a good, cheesy 80s horror movie. The cinematic equivalent of visiting a haunted house. But I'm giving this a 5 out of 10.
Wow.
I really was not that impressed. And like I said, I watched it with fresh eyes. I think if I grew up with this movie and watched it more as a kid, I might have had a different opinion. Do I recommend this movie? Absolutely. I think people should watch this movie, if anything, for the comedy alone. And this movie is great. I mean, the practical effects are great. You know, it's right there in the middle with me. I didn't love this movie. I did like it. Would I rewatch it again anytime soon? Probably not. I'm still going to go back to the second house and watch that first.
And you're definitely entitled to it.
You're damn right I am. Okay, so anyway, I want to hear what your thoughts are about this movie, because I know you've been really looking forward to talking about it.
Okay, so I'm going to start out by saying I am rating this movie not on nostalgia, because if I rated it on nostalgia, it'd be a 10.
It'd be a 10, yeah.
I am rating this movie on the movie itself. Is it a perfect movie? Absolutely not. There are some things that I really wish they would have done better. I really wish they would have done a better ending. The third act was a little too rushed. As far as, again, score, cinematography, special, you know, practical effects, acting, whatever, all that's a 10. The story is it's a little back and forth. It really gets jumbled up, and I do agree with you about the ending. It was a little hokey. All that being said, I will give this movie a 7.5 on the merit of the movie alone. Again, if I was to look at it from a nostalgic point of view, this movie would be a freaking 20. I mean, I love this movie. But on the movie of its own, it's a 7.5. I recommend it. I will recommend it any day of the week. It's a movie I love and I, you know, hold up there in very high regard. Again, it's not a perfect movie. It does have some issues. But if you're looking for a fun, cheesy, good horror comedy that I think really going to enjoy, you know, you could do a lot worse.
I think that if you're looking for, well, William Cat alone is just
he is something, man.
He's out there in this movie. If you really want to see a wacky cheeseball comedic horror movie, this is the one.
Oh yeah,
I'd have to. I mean, it's up there, man. It's really, I mean, don't get me wrong. This is a good movie. I did enjoy watching it. It wasn't my favorite. And there were a lot of parts that I did like. My favorite part is when the whole raccoon, when he's telling him to stand there. You need to shoot it as soon as I open the door, because if not, he's going to escape. He'll run away.
And
the way he's describing it just makes him sound like he's just fucking bonkers.
Yeah, man. And Harold's just sitting there like, I'm going to die here.
He doesn't know what, he's just giving like a what the fuck look, and he's just nodding his head and agreeing, and he's something, not saying anything. He's just looking crazy.
Something occurs to me. This is the second movie in recent history that we've done that has had a character named Harold in it.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We did Scary Stories, and that was Harold. Yeah.
Thank God George Wendt didn't play a scarecrow.
Ooh. I could see that. Actually, the scarecrow in that looked a little bit like George Wendt.
Holy shit, he did.
Yeah,
wow.
A little bit. But
anyways, moving right along.
I'm really happy that we did do this movie, though. I really am happy that I took the time to watch it finally after all these. It only took me like 30 years. But yeah, I'm really glad that you recommended this movie, Mike. I know last week we talked about what the hell movie we're going to do. And I said, well, why don't we do House? And you agreed. And I said, yeah, you know, that's awesome. Perfect. You know, so, you know, and I really appreciate your recommending it, because I know you've talked about this movie and how much you've liked it over the years.
Oh, yeah.
But we've never dove into it like we did on this episode. So I found out a lot of really good information about it, and it was fun.
Oh, yeah.
And I can't wait for the next episode.
Yeah, I'm telling you, dude. And this is why I love doing the podcast, because, you know, we talk
about... nothing better to do?
Well, that. But it gives us a chance to actually really delve deep into these movies and give our opinions. Because we talk about this shit all the freaking time. Whether we're on the podcast, off the podcast.
We do.
We talk about this, but we don't...
We don't get really that much into detail like we do on here.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's why I love the podcast as well.
So, yeah, you guys get to listen to all the useless crap that floats around inside our heads. So.
So there it is. I don't have any final thoughts except for, well, what I just said. If you're in the mood for just a cheesy cornball 80s movie, this is it. And if anything, if you know George Wendt, you know, from Cheers. He's Norm from Cheers. Everyone knows him from... He's Norm from Cheers.
Yeah.
Definitely give this a watch, because if anything, he's really great on the screen.
I think he's probably one of the high points. Him and Richard Mull.
Oh, he was good, man. He's scary.
And, yeah.
He's a tall fucking guy. I think they said he was
6'6".
Yeah, it was a 6'6" or 6'7", I think they said.
And he was hilarious as Bull in that report. But, just... As far as Goromita goes, half a star. There's not hardly any gore in this.
No, I was looking for it, and I would say this is 100% kid friendly. I mean, I would say 8 and up, you know, because it could give nightmares. I get nightmares about this movie from the War Machine. The War Machine. The War Beast or the War Demon.
War Demon.
That thing is a nightmare in and of itself.
Yeah. I recommend, this is a movie that I would start my kid out on if they were wanting to get into horror.
It's a very good movie to start out on, yes.
Like I said, I was 8 or 9.
In the second one.
Yes. Yes.
I gotta throw
Yes. If you watch the first one, you gotta watch the second one.
Yeah, you really
do. It is the law. You will go to jail. You know, if you're looking to, if your kid comes up to you and says, hey, I want to get into horror, start them off with this and the second one. It's a good place to start. It's not super gory. There's a lot of comedy. It's got a good ending.
Happy ending. Yeah.
It's not all blood and guts and bad stuff and whatever. So, yeah, I mean, this is a great starting point.
I agree.
And those are my final thoughts.
And on that note, I think that's it. You know, thanks all you guys for listening. Seriously, I've been talking to some listeners, and if you're listening, you know, it's great that you're checking out the show. We really appreciate it. We got a lot more listeners than we thought we would have. So I think that concludes our 28th episode of the Chainsaw Enema Show. You can listen to our previous episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and wherever else you could pretty much find podcasts.
Yeah.
And if you have any movie requests,
let us know.
You can email MisfitMike at
MisfitMike1986@gmail.com.
Or send us a Facebook message, and please remember to rate and leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Yeah, anywhere you pretty much listen. Don't forget to lock your doors and windows, check the closet, and look under the bed. Until the next time, I'm Johnny B. Ghoul.
And as always, I'm Misfit Mike.
And always remember, keep the horror alive.